Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UA Little Rock Public Radio. Arkansas Rep's 2016-17 season closes this week with Godspell, a show that has kept its hold on the years since it opened in 1970. Directed by Donna Drake, who is already known in Little Rock as director of My Fair Lady. But not having met her before, I was beguiled by her background and her reasons for creating this reenactment of the legendary musical. Donna began at 5 years old wanting to be a dancer, which led through various stages of growth and interest to New York City, where she found how the magic of imagination could cross the footlights.
Oh, I love what you just said. You are now talking my language and talking to my heart and to my soul. I wanted to be a performer when I first came to New York. It was a man named Michael Bennett. One day we were in rehearsal, and I looked out into the audience, and I said, "What are you looking at?" And he just said, "Come here." And I went out into the audience where it was kind of dark, and he stood behind me, and he said, "Now watch what I do during this number." And the girls were singing at the ballet, and he said, "Now watch this light as I bring it in." And it's a slow 18-count. And I knew at that moment I was home, to be out in the dark, painting and creating the canvas, sometimes creating unpleasant things, thought-provoking, not being afraid to make the people who are sitting in the dark feel something, be touched by something, as well as be entertained by something. But it is the magic. You're right.
And this particular show, I've never seen it. I've never heard it. I was all caught up when it came out. I'd already been sold to Jesus Christ Superstar. I was working on a music degree at SMU. We were just about to leave Dallas and pick up other things, and Godspell never came across my screen at all. And even now, I've never heard it. I've never seen it. And the name alone, it sort of, is it gospel?
Yes.
Or Godspell?
It's the gospel.
Yes. But it's been manipulated by the inventors of it, so
right.
It's changed. And what intrigues me is its history. When it first came out in 1971.
I believe you're right, yeah.
And then a couple of years later, they took it out and took all the music away and made it into more of a straight play.
I'm not familiar with that production of it. I'm only familiar with the musical.
Right.
And the revival of it that was recently on Broadway.
And the revival of it was not the revival of the very, very first musical.
Yes, it was. Stephen Schwartz's Godspell?
Yeah. Okay, well, I must have misread it. That it had been manipulated at that point, or reinvented. And what is being referred to, it, what you're doing, is reinventing it.
We are reimagining it.
Reimagining it. That's a better word, yes. And you have to tell me why its original became so popular. And so almost beloved?
Well, it's the Christ story, the story that we all know.
Well, that was what Jesus Christ Superstar was.
Absolutely.
But I hadn't realized. I knew that one called Tommy came out about the same time as Jesus Christ. But I didn't realize there was another one with a gospel story. A musical.
It is indeed the Christ story, and we have just reimagined the setting of it.
Mm-hmm.
And with the blessings of Mr. Schwartz, who is an idol of mine, I'm taking a very bold and brave step with this production. We have decided to set it in 1968 on the outskirts of Birmingham, Alabama. So we know what that time was. A lot of racial tension, social unrest, and ignorance. And there is a circus in town. It's a small family-run circus that has just performed their final show. It's in foreclosure. They just couldn't afford to keep it open. So they are starting to strip down the tent and all of that. And a young man who is a evangelical preacher and is preaching things that the local officials do not like. He's on the run, and he runs into this circus tent with all of its interesting people. And Godspell, at its core, is about the bringing together of a community. And that's basically the story we're telling, is how if we can do it, if we 12 people in the troupe of the circus can come together as a community, well, so can you. The only thing we are adding to this production is we are indeed, it's not written in, but I am putting it in, a very subtle and simple resurrection. We tell the story as everybody knows it. Everybody knows what happened. It's just done in the world of circus, and I have to say that we have extremely trained circus performers. We are doing circus like it hasn't been seen before. There are trapeze. There is the seer circle. There's clowns. There's tumbling. There's tight wire. We're doing it. You will see pure circus, and you will see the Christ story interwoven into it.
So the whole structure of the way you're doing it, imagining it, is not by any means as a result of somebody pulling strings somewhere else.
Correct.
In other words, this is a reliving without the people living it knowing that it's a reliving.
Not quite in your head yet. What do you mean by that?
That this is the story that you're going to be showing with the circus people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it with fervor and belief.
Absolutely.
Without any idea that this is what they're doing.
Pretty much, yes. They don't realize it.
It's a story that they're doing
because the Christ figure realizes it.
Okay.
The role of the man playing Jesus.
Well, he does in real life, you know, in the actual belief system. Yes. That's what he
knows
is.
What's going on. He's right. An enlightened master.
And he can't, because of who he is, tell everybody to in a way that everybody would believe that he
Correct.
Is indeed the Son of God.
Right.
So in this respect, this is where the other people in the story that you are reimagining are just following and learning the story as they go.
They're learning it as it happens. And we do indeed have a Last Supper or a last meal.
Do you also have the Garden of Gethsemane?
To an extent, but the garden is inside a circus tent.
Mm-hmm. But you do have the story
Absolutely.
As it comes out with Jesus.
How could you fall asleep on me? Some of you will betray me.
Mm-hmm.
John Judas, who owns the circus, do what you have to do.
And these people that are doing this are doing it totally unknowing as to their particular positions, stories, acting.
I think the characters become aware as the story progresses on. Maybe not all of them, but I know that the character of John Judas realizes, oh, my life has brought me to this moment because I am supposed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a soul purpose. But he doesn't know it at the beginning of the show, not at all.
And there's Peter who betrays him.
Peter
says, before the cock crows twice,
three times,
you will have denied me
three
thrice.
Times.
Yes.
Correct. We don't name our circus performers Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or Peter, and all.
Or as disciples.
They're not disciples. They're 12 fascinating circus performers who take the journey with this young man. and it changes their lives.
Now, is this...
And it's also a celebration. There's a great deal of joy and comedy going on. And when Jesus starts to tell the parables, I mean, the clowns just jump up and go, okay, I got this, I got this, I can do this. Mm-hmm. We have a clown that does puppetry and, you know, tells parables that way.
Now, is this something that you have imagined?
I and my partners. I work with two gentlemen, Joshua Dean and Ben Franklin from Two Ring Circus. We've been dear friends for many, many years. And they brought the piece to me.
Oh, I was going to ask you.
We have this idea because they own Aerial Arts in New York City and Two Ring Circus. Uh-huh. The music lends itself to 60s.
It's the original music?
Yep.
Okay. And the original texts?
And the original text. We are not changing any of that at all. We are honoring the original.
So the original, how did it play out? You know, I told you I had never seen it or heard it.
It's more hippies and joyous and peace, love. It's more silly. I'm kind of hitting the dark moments of what really went on to this young man that we killed. I dare to ask the question, it may be 1968, and we are persecuting a young man for his beliefs, for the color of his skin, for what was going on at that time. My question to the audience is, it's 2017. Have we learned our lessons? Are we still unkind? I'm pushing those buttons at the same time. I'm trying to humanize the story for all of us.
Is this the first time it's gone on stage?
This is our very first time trying it out.
So you are watching closely to see whether there's something that just needs to be adjusted.
Absolutely, yes.
A word changed or something that makes quite a difference.
I will always honor the original script out of respect to the people that wrote it. But we've been working on it for over a year, and it's just been in our heads and acting it out in my living room. And now to bring it to life with these incredible performers and designers. The design team is stunning. I have to say the people over at Arkansas Rep, they're just outdoing themselves. They're going there totally. Usually I direct a show and after opening night I say, see ya, bye-bye. I'm going to stay so I can watch every show and learn from it. We would like to take this forward to other theaters if you know, Lady Luck decides to shine on us.
Now, how about the original creators? Have they expressed any interest to come and watch?
We have invited Stephen Schwartz to come down. I know he's working on Silver Crane right now and is not available at the moment. I very much want them to see it. It's just a lovely interpretation of a beautiful story.
My guest is Donna Drake, director for her reenactment of Godspell for Arkansas Rep in a magical setting. So putting it in its new sight, in its new encompassment, within its new belief, it'll be interesting to see how the audiences react.
It will be very interesting. I'm hoping they embrace it. I really do. I'm retelling an age-old story, not changing the story much, just putting it in a different setting of, well, what if Jesus showed up in 1968 as opposed to 2,000 years ago? How would we have treated him?
Well, I know I was talking years ago with my son about this, and he said if Jesus came back, he'd be treated just as badly as
just
he was
as
when
poorly.
He was alive. Yes.
Yes. We have a long way to go, we human souls.
And it's not necessarily the color of his skin as the fact that he was poverty-stricken and they almost shied away from him because they didn't know what he was going to demand of them that they weren't prepared to give.
Right. And the enlightenment that this man had. So many times I try to let my little mind open up and think that big, and I just wow, mm-hmm. the thoughts that must have gone through him.
Where was it set originally?
Originally, it was, wow, that's a good question. They were all dressed as hippies. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. I'm trying to think. I can see the bright colored costumes and the flowers and the bring on the love. I don't remember.
Because to me, the way you've reimagined it in the South is because there's always such a strong current of evangelical.
Right.
That's built its own story.
And I'm also raised a Southern girl, so that lives in my soul also.
So you didn't have a moment of enlightenment then that said, this is what I'm going to do and this is where I'm going to do it?
I don't think so, no. I think because I have always, for most of my life, I have been on a personal spiritual journey, and I still am, just my desire to know what I call the Christ consciousness. I would like to know that. So this is an opportunity for me to not only grow myself, but to find a device, a theatrical device, and way to share it with the community of whoever is in the audience.
I was just wondering how the conversations went when you came to friends and said, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And then you had to approach the creators, the original creators. How did you do that?
Well, I didn't do it by myself. Mm-hmm. I had support with Ben and Josh. I have found that every single person we have shared this idea with has embraced it. Mm-hmm. One of the first persons I shared it with was the past artistic director, Bob Hupp. And I just said, give me your thoughts, Bob, you know, a little feedback. And within, I think, like 2 to 3 days, this amazing man called me back and said, we're doing it. You need to put this out there. And
so he had already set the season before he left.
He put us in there. And you know, he's so open to all of that. And then Bob, of course, has now gone up to Syracuse. And John Miller Stephanie, who is now the producing artistic director, he has been so supportive of us, you know. It was sort of just handed to him. He didn't have much choice. Right. But he has embraced the team. All of the designers have jumped on board. There's been no conflict. John Miller Stephanie was instrumental in getting the approval and the blessing of Stephen Schwartz. He wrote the letters to make this happen so that there would be no conflict or drama. And it's just been a very supported, smooth ride.
When I first heard of it being on the show on this season, the people who told me, what I think was Bob and the others were similarly placed, were just saying this is impossible because they'll never give permission. They've never been known to allow anybody to do anything with the show that they created.
We're not changing the show they created. Every word, every song, every lyric is there.
But you've changed the concept.
Absolutely. If you read in the beginning of the script, Stephen encourages that. Let your imagination do what you can to share this story.
Do you know if Bob Hupp's coming?
I don't know if Bob Hupp's coming. I hope that he will. I just saw him a couple of weeks ago because I and my partners, Ben and Josh, we are going to Syracuse stage to set the Cirque version of Wizard of Oz later in the year. So very excited about that.
Yes, dangling by your toes from
Absolutely.
Some high place, which is, it's amazing now. The sequence of everything is set because biblically that's the way it goes.
Yes.
Have you brought any insight that you feel, just yourself, that might lend a sort of different chiasma? For example, the other thieves, the prostitutes, the things that were there because that's the way humankind is.
Right.
And I was just thinking of all the people. Were there people in the crowd that nobody took any notice of that later on have been taken out into their own story?
I don't know. I am going to put my personal stamp on this. I take that back, not a stamp, but my own soul onto this production. Because for just about my whole life, I truly, with all my heart, believe we're here on this planet to love one another. I'm glad I know that. I forget it every day, and because I'm not that enlightened. But if I can help remind others, and that's basically what this show is all about, is we are a community, and we are here to love one another, and hopefully learn our lessons well.
Now, in the Bible, there is no definitive story as to what actually happened at the end.
You're talking about the resurrection or the crucifixion?
The crucifixion, because for that, the resurrection happened, but only to a few. Mm-hmm. Many people saw the crucifixion because it was an everyday way of getting rid of, you know, of people who weren't supposed to be around doing things. So I thought, well, because that's where it ends for most people.
We're not ending it there. We are killing him. But we're not ending it there.
No, I realize that. But I was just thinking that for the multitudes who gathered to see that this young man who had no business to do what he's been doing is getting his just rewards. That's what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
And the thunder crashed, the lightning flashed, and that meant nothing.
Well, crucifixions were an everyday affair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And they turned their back as soon as the man was dead, and off they go and follow a few days later probably for another similar
spectacle. Interesting that, you know, this young man who only preached for 3 years and did it by foot, traveling around, it's 2,000 years later, and truth wins. I truly believe that. Truth wins. His message is still alive today, whether it's in the form of Christianity or in the form of, you know, if you look at the Quran or the Torah at its core, it is to love one another. I'm a spiritualist. At my core, I am here to love humankind. And that outlived the crucifixion, his life. Truth wins.
Has this been inspired without you realizing it because the world is in such a mess right now?
Oh, boy, do we need some good loving right now, don't we? It's interesting to watch what's going on in our society right now and all over the world. We have some very, very interesting people leading this world, wherever they're taking it. And I think sometimes we have to hit rock bottom before we open our eyes and go, gee, we shouldn't have done that. And we little people, like myself, that are screaming, please don't do this, please don't do this, open your minds, open your hearts. I'm not really heard, but boy, I write those letters to my senators, and I scream as loud as I can. Don't know that it's being heard, but I will always fight for truth and love. And we are... our world has turned inside out. I hope we survive it. I hope we come out of it gracefully. And I hope whomever our future leaders are will do better.
Where have you gone to get the actors for this?
Actually, these actors were handpicked because the circus work is so important. We've hired circus performers. Our Jesus is an actor that we hired at an audition in New York. So is our John Judas. We have handpicked these actors. I've been in this business so long, it was really easy to come up with, well, here's my dream list. I got my dream list. They said yes.
So the actual number of actors involved in it are the ones who are crucially involved in it.
Very much so.
So yes. You don't have haggers-on who have significance.
Significance as?
Well, they're there, so they're important.
Yes.
But they don't have anything specific. They're just there to be people.
Just there to be people and do what they do and create their own lives and then share it with whoever's sitting out in the dark.
So what I'm saying is, do they have any kind of dialogue, any kind of movements that won't be part of the tent, but who are watching or having some kind of reaction that makes it all a little bit more believable?
These are things that probably happen during the rehearsal process.
Okay.
The actors, they will ask soul-searching, very intense questions, and I work with them to find the answer for them because they've got to face some truths themselves. That happens in the rehearsal process.
Now, you've only been here since
this
Monday.
Is day two of rehearsal.
Yeah. So have you had, how many of the people in the whole cast have you had a chance to talk to?
Quite a few. Mm-hmm. I did a reading about a year ago, and most of them were a part of it. We've only added three new people to the story, I mean, to the production.
Now, to keep this sort of believable in that biblical sense, do they also have the means to make the music, or do you have a band?
We have a band on stage.
That's part of the tent.
It's a circus band.
Okay.
They're packing up their gear to get out of town, too, until this guy shows up.
What sort of instruments?
Believe it or not, it's a four-piece band. It's a piano, bass, drums, guitar. Our musical director, the sensational Helen Gregory, is going to also add a keyboard so she can get that certain sounds and circus sounds.
And where is it placed? In the tent.
In the tent.
Okay.
Yeah. They're upstage right. You'll see them. I want to get this version of this story out there. To retell a well-known story, it strikes chords within you, yourself. And to bring this story to life in a way that I hope I can strike chords in the hearts of those watching, I know I'm going to provoke some thought, and I'm okay with that. I don't think all questions are ever answered. We are all on this journey together.
That was Donna Drake, director of Godspell, a new reenactment which opens here, a world premiere in Little Rock, with two preview performances, May 31st and June 1st at 7 p.m., followed by the official opening night, 8 p.m., June the 2nd, all three on RAP's main stage in downtown Little Rock, with a post-performance champagne reception in the theater lobby to meet and greet the cast and staff. For tickets, call 501-378-0405 or visit therep.org. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.